Chapter 8 of Greengrey Homestead by Steele Rudd. This legamous recording may be distributed and adapted freely for any purpose. Read by Anna Simon. A bright, velvety afternoon. You're working on your cowyard, bringing it up to date, and putting in round stuff, throwing out sheets of old iron and curls of iron bark and scraps of barbed wire. Old Tim Ryan and young Bob McCleverty are giving you a hand. Old Tim will be standing pawing his whiskers, recalling the massacre of station sheep in 68, on the very spot where your homestead stands, and young Bob will be standing taking it all in, while you're grunting and straining to hold up the heavy end of a mighty sapling rail that will bruise the feet off you if you fumble and let it drop, and when suddenly Rover will let the world know that a sulky with two ladies in it is making for the front door of the home. Their appearance will be a surprise. Old Tim, in the act of demonstrating a squatter dodging a flying spear, will break off suddenly to glance round. Young Bob will put his head through a panel of the yard and discover, "It's Mrs. Jubilee and Josie King." Ghost! You'll drop the mighty sapling with a crash and jump back bursting to call them a pair of damn fools. But you won't get your intentions recorded. Instead, you'll smile through the blood that's rushing to your face and stare with them at the movements of the sulky. It will stop at your front veranda. You haven't got a back one yet. And Mrs. Jubilee, who has charge of the reins, will be looking about for sight of you.
"They're looking for you, Dick," old Tim will suggest, concernedly.
And young Bob, with a rising temperature because they might drive across the yard, will urge you to cut over quick and see them, and me and Mr. Ryan will be putting up the next panel." Then he'll bend slowly over the sapling that you dropped, and be looking back between his legs for old Tim to cooperate. Though he's young Bob, he's fairly old, and has a shyness about meeting women when they're dressed up, equalled only by your own.
"Yes, gone, man, gone."
And old Tim will attach himself to the sapling alongside young Bob. So you'll crawl out of the enclosure, casting perturbed glances at the dirt on yourself and tightening your belt. And as you slouch along the crooked little track that you and Rover and the possums have worn, you're lost in an abyss of discomfiture. Your courage falls like the leaves of a tree. You're in a sort of dream, and you look down at the red ants going along ahead of you, and coming forward to meet you. And while you walk on them as if they had no feelings and no right to live, you wish to heavens you could be turned into one of them. Just when you've only 10 or 12 more yards to cover, and the wind sporting with the drooping leaf of your old hat will show you the two women sitting under their flashing red and blue parasols, watching you coming, and the horse pricking his ears at you, you'll suddenly remember having burst the seat of your pants, straining to upend a gatepost before old Tim and young Bob arrive to give a hand. Mighty! You don't know if your shirt is protruding through the rent or not, and it's too late now to put your hand behind to feel, and, conscious all at once of the gentle breezes finding their way to your bare skin, the aperture will feel enormous, and it will prey on your mind.
"Hello, Mr. Dick, gal!"
Mrs. Jubilee, who has a pleasing way and charming informality, will greet you. She's one in a roomful, is Mrs. Lee. What you'll answer won't be clearly heard by them, nor by yourself either, and you'll lift your hand as if you were going to stop your hat from flying off instead of raising it. Then Mrs. Lee will be sorry they didn't notice you were working at the yard, or they would have driven over and saved you the walk, and she'll ask,
"Don't you know Miss King, Josie King?"
Of course you know her, in a sort of way. You used to see her about the home when you worked for old Silas, her father, but you didn't look right at her, because you were propping yourself as close to the horse as you could squeeze on account of the sudden trouble on your mind, crossing your legs to steady yourself, and looking like a section in a dog-leg fence. Your eyes will meet Josie's by accident, and, what will be surprising, she'll be smiling down at you. She, who was always reckoned proud and stuck up, and was never allowed by her father to speak to working men. And she'll show such a set of teeth when she smiles that you'll want to see them again. And the flush in your face, and the shaking of your hands, and the shortness of your speech will all be put down by them to your modesty. They've heard you talked of as being very modest. Flashing her large, motherly eyes round the homestead, Mrs. Lee will mentally note your methods and habits.
In a glance or two she'll measure you as correctly as a cobbler would measure you for a pair of boots. She's been through a lot of pioneering herself as Mrs. Lee, worked beside Juba in the fields, lived with him under canvas, shed gallons of tears over his shattered hopes, helped to make a man of him in the end. She'll take stock of your improvements and the plan you've laid out the little homestead on. And while you're uncomfortable because you can't think of anything to say to Josie, she'll rescue you by breaking into admiration of the splendid avenue of trees you've formed by leaving the gums that were growing in line with each other and grubbing out the others. Not having noticed your ingenuity and sense of the artistic before, she'll be full of enthusiasm. She'll infect Josie with it, too, and the combined compliments and the smiles they'll give you will make you blush more than ever, and you'll grin and shake your head till you forget all about your pants. You'll be going to uncross your legs, too, to square yourself and put out your chest, when by chance you'll look down and catch a view of your shadow. Holy! You'll see a part of yourself projecting and moving when you move, like the ear of a calf. For a moment you can't make out what part of you it is, and you'll be wondering, till suddenly it will explode on you like a bomb, that the tail of your shirt is hanging out. Laws, what a start you'll get! And how you'll change your position, dropping your hands by your thighs and spreading out your fingers, and you'll be wondering if they noticed it. But it's substance, not shadows, that interests women. So Mrs. Lee, enthusing more, will remark the simple handy way you've hung your gate, and the patent boot-scraper you have. Your little vegetable garden, too, and fowl roost will take her attention, and you begin to feel proud and comfortable and be getting carried away again. But when Josie, who's been looking round, is suddenly taken with a patent armchair on your veranda, shaped out of a hollow log, the approbation they both bestow on it is nearly your undoing. Without thinking you'll turn round to look at the patent yourself, but all at once you'll front face again and look up into their faces with your eyes blinking and your hands twitching. Changing the subject, Mrs. Lee will start pulling at her glove and telling you what it is they've really come to see you about. Miss King and she are collecting a little money to give the school kids over their way a Christmas treat, and she'll give you to understand that they haven't called to dun you, but they've come out of respect and as a curtsy. Mrs. Lee knows to the sixpence pretty well what your farm revenue amounts to, and what you can afford in donations and what you can't. She also knows that to pass you by, out of pity and sympathy, would cut you deeper and leave more on your mind than waking up in the morning and finding one of your cows had turned up her heels. So, producing the list, which is flowing over with names and looks like a diagram of wireless waves, she'll tell you they only expect a small contribution, as you're a single man, Dick. But when you're married and have a lot of children to send along to eat their share of the cakes and sandwiches, you'll be expected to donate a lot more. And though she'll beam first on Josie while she's saying all this, and then on you, a queer feeling will come over you, an intuition, which will keep you from looking at Josie, and Josie from looking at you. But it's the first time you've been asked for a subscription, and it comes on you as a firstborn, and so your heart will open to it like a door. But it's Josie's job to record the donations, so while she taps her pink lips with the head of a silver-mounted pencil, she'll be looking down with her brown eyes, waiting for you to name the amount. That will be a trying moment. You'll be overwhelmed with the spirit of big-heartedness. Figures will fly to your brain as if you were a bank. Your eyes will dance and glisten as though you're enjoying a new sensation. Your shadow will be neglected again, and at last you'll blurt out, "Make it a quid."
"Oh, Dick Gal,"
Mrs. Lee will laugh, blushing crimson for your doggone recklessness. And Josie, when she gets her breath, will gasp,
"Mr. Gal!"
"That's all right," you'll endorse with a grin. "It doesn't often happen." But, like a mother to you, Mrs. Lee will tell Josie to put down 2 shillings, reckoning it's quite enough, and more than some will be sending along a cartload of youngsters are giving.
"Quite enough, Mr. Gal,"
Josie will confirm, and her voice will sound as music to you. "All right, if you think so," you'll chuckle agreeably. "If you wait a while, I'll go in and get it for you." You'll be in the act of turning right round again to go off into your castle, when the shadow will once more catch your eye. Laws, what a predicament you'll be in then! They'll notice your hesitation, and the fresh colour that rushed to your cheeks. But they'll think it occurred to you that your treasury is empty, and so Mrs. Lee, to help you out, will tell you, "Not to mind, it doesn't matter, it'll do any time." But you don't want to let them think you haven't got any money, so you get a sublime idea, and waving your hand to a big gum swaying on the other side of them, you'll observe that it isn't often four native bears can be seen up one tree. And while they're looking round, laughing, and trying to locate the fourth bear, you'll be taking three long fox-trot steps backwards, telling them at the same time where the fourth one is perched, till suddenly you turn round onto the veranda like a hunted wallaby. Though you fancy you managed it all right, the ladies will turn their heads just in time to see your shirt-tail wagging as you disappear into your castle. Next minute you'll be sitting on the corner of the table, holding your heart and your breath, and sighing, "Oh, hell!" But of course you won't see the pathetic smile they'll give each other, or hear Mrs. Lee whisper, "The poor fellow!" They'll be real understanding women, acting to others as they would have others act to them. But having got your breath back, and feeling safe inside, you'll be breaking your neck, screwing and twisting, to find out the total damage to your pants. Hokey! You would never have believed it! They're nearly split in halves! And thanking the Lord, in your delusion, that the women didn't see them, you'll get out of those pants as though they were infested with bull ants, and pull on others in great haste. Putting your hand on a couple of bob, out you'll go again, smiling confidently, and looking a different chap, as you slouch forward to the sulky, asking if they've seen the fourth bear yet. And out of the corner of her eye, Mrs. Lee will notice your lightning change, and that you rubbed them on the floor before putting them on, thinking to make them look like a pair you discarded. But you won't be aware of what she's noticed, so you'll go on reckoning that women are as simple as most people think. When they're ready to go, and are shaking hands with you, and you're blushing up again, you'll promise faithfully to go to the picnic, and to go early, so as to help put up the swings, and collect the wood for boiling the tea-buckets. Then you'll open the gate for them, and stand by ready to wave when they look back. But you won't have to wave. Still, when you turn away to go off to old Tim and young Bob again, you'll be uplifted, and you'll grin broadly, and feel like a martyred hero rising out of his own ashes. End of chapter 8.